Grassroots, where we agitate for social change with music and commentary. Joining me is Professor Diane Johnson and political analysis provided by Landon Crow. From the Grassroots, every first and third Friday between 8 and 10 p.m. on 90.7 FM, KBOO in Portland.
KBOO Community Radio is a proud sponsor of the People's Climate Movement March and Rally, Saturday, April 29th at noon, meeting at Dawson Park in North Portland. The People's Climate Movement March and Rally calls for racial, social, and economic justice as pathways to climate action. All individuals are invited to join to show solidarity. The gathering begins at noon, and speakers will begin at 12:30 p.m. The march starts at 1:30 p.m. and ends at 4 with tabling and cleanup. Again, that's the People's Climate Movement March and Rally, Saturday, April 29th at noon, meeting at Dawson Park at North Williams and North Stanton in Portland. More information can be found at kboo.fm on the right side of the homepage under Community Events.
Gone are the rains of April, gone the cruel cold. Old man winter has departed, stories have been told. It's another May Day come again, goodbye to the rains of April. Another May Day come again, and we dance around the maypole. Welcome in the wonder this spring and the oncoming summer, the festival of Beltane and the nectar of the lover. It's the holiday of pagans and the holiday of labor, and we merry meet in the mountains. Praise the Creator. May Day, May Day at last. May Day, hark in the future, remember the past. May Day, May Day at last. May Day, hark in the future, remember the from the cherry trees, and we consecrate the season to the scene with our own sweet copulation. The joy we share together here can smash the state of the nation. Smash the state of the nation. May Day, May Day at last. May Day, hark in the future, remember the
And good morning, good morning. You are tuned to KBOO Portland, your very own community radio station. This is Ani.
This is Lynn.
And we are here just a few days before May Day, celebrating in that positively revolting way that we have about us. Thanks for joining us this morning, and let's just sort of get on with the tempo of the show.
Okay.
So, May Day, it's coming right up. May Day just so happens to be one of my very favoriteest holidays.
And let's hope. Let's just hope there are some Mayflowers. There had better be Mayflowers this year. That's all I have to say after this April rain. We are looking for some Mayflowers right now.
I've seen them. Okay. There's hyacinths. I've seen them.
I know. There's tulips and daffodils.
Yeah,
and
well, those are
beautiful.
The Mayflowers, I have to
and
admit.
The trees, you know, it's here. How many shades of green can you get here? We are
50 shades of green.
50 shades of green. It's beautiful, but we're all ready for a little bit of sunshine.
It's very true. Though I remember making May baskets as a kid, because we did that in Portland Public Schools.
Even in Chicago Public Schools,
there we go.
Made May baskets.
The flowers that we had to work with, generally stolen out of our parents' yards, but given to them in the form of a May basket hung on their door, were daffodils and tulips. I mean, you know, those are the spring flowers. Hyacinths, my favorite. Anyways, we digress. And yet, we don't all at the same time, because May Day is so many things.
And we need a party this year.
We really kind of do. But May Day is, well, it's a party, but it's also a day of resistance. So May Day, it is traditionally, it's a day that celebrates and affirms life, joy, procreation, fertility, sexuality, and resistance, all at the same time. How does it manage to do that? Well, it is a day that we focus our attention on the bloody history of the loss of the commons and the rise of capitalism. It is a day of the workers and a day for life affirmed through our own toil, through our own labors. It's also, so, you know, it's the workers' holiday. Definitely a time to look at ending capitalism, because really, when we talk about affirming life, what is that thing that rather opposes that? Oh yeah, capitalism. So there's that end of things. But also, if we look at the Northern European traditions, Western European traditions, back in ancient history, and sometimes not so ancient history, we find it is one of the eight holy days of the pagan calendar. And basically, this, more traditionally known as Beltane, is the time of year where the goddess takes her consort, and this is enacted in the villages, you know, throughout throughout the celebrating areas. And wherever
and
it may be celebrated.
And Marmite, those
Yeah, Western Europe. Okay. So I'm talking about that particular form of the tradition. And basically, this is the day that you, erected the maypole, that you put the maypole up and you did your dancing around it, with people going clockwise and people going widdershins and weaving the tapestry that is life around the maypole that is planted into the fertile soil. Then you have some feasting generally involved, from some feasting and some drinking. Then the bonfires are lit to keep the fields warm and to bring in and welcome the sun energy.
Doesn't
all through
somebody
the
dress
night.
Up like a deer? No, but aren't the male deers?
I don't know that particular tradition. I always like it when Lynn springs. No, nor the. I don't think we dress up as guinea pigs either.
No,
but it's a tradition.
A sign of fertility,
I kind of want to start.
The male, like with horns.
Yeah,
and,
her and
it
the
was
hunter,
some
Kurnanos,
British mystery.
Whatnot.
I was watching that. Was
yeah,
watching.
I think I don't know.
Okay,
I don't
never
know
mind.
That particular
never
one.
Mind.
Maybe it was a particular village. I don't know. But yes, at that point, after the feasting and the dancing and the drinking and the whatnoting. There was more whatnoting to be had in the fields throughout the night. It was the time that, in fact, the old poem, Hooray, Hooray for the 1st of May, outdoor, you know, stuff, loving, I guess we could say, begins today. So it is all of these traditions wrapped up that actually caused this to be pretty much my favorite day of the year. It's a high energy day. Full of politics, full of pagan spirituality, full of the turning of the seasons, and really about joy and life.
And on May 1st, 1886, more than 300,000 workers in 13,000 businesses across the United States walked off to their jobs in the first May Day celebration in, well, in the history of the United States. This says in history. Wrong.
Well, maybe the first in Chicago, celebration of that sort.
Right. That was the epicenter of the eight-hour day. Agitators, 40,000, went out on strike with the anarchist in the forefront of the public's eye. So that is the other rendition of May Day. Folks are calling for a general strike this year as well. I say maintain tradition. And that seems like a really good one to do. If you can, for sure. No work, no shopping. There were some other no things, but those would be the first. No work, no shopping, and enjoy your friends and family.
Right. So there has often been general strike called for May Day to, again, reclaim our lives from the wheels of industry, right? To celebrate the rights of workers and the right to our life and our happiness. That certainly is a part of things. We had the pleasure of talking with Peter Linebaugh last year, who wrote the fabulous, fabulous book, The Incomplete, True, Authentic, and Wonderful History of May Day. And, you know, Peter Linebaugh says, May Day is about affirmation. It's about the love of life and the start of spring. So it has to be about the beginning of the end of the capitalist system of exploitation, oppression, war, and overall misery, toil, and moil. And I have to agree, that certainly is true. We want to invite you to call in and let us know what you're doing to celebrate May Day. There are many actions around town that one can take part in. We'll detail a couple of those. But what are you doing? What are you doing this May Day? 503-231-8187 is the number to call to join us this morning. We also want to encourage you to check us out on Facebook. You can like our fan page there. You can also follow along in the Twitterverse at Positive Revolt.
Always a fine thing to do. And one of the things I always like to think about anarchy when we think of May Day. And when I think of anarchy, I think of Howard Zinn. A lot of people don't. He proclaimed himself an anarchist. He is no, unfortunately, man, and I cry about it often, Howard Zinn is not here anymore. He was one of, he was such a true activist, but he said of himself, I am an anarchist, and according to anarchist principles, nation states become obstacles to a true humanist globalization. In a certain sense, the movement towards globalization where capitalists are trying, though I just heard Trump say he was a nationalist and a globalization, which, you know, makes as much sense as anything else that he says. But in a certain sense, the movement towards globalization where capitalists are trying to leap over nation state builders creates a kind of opportunity for movement to ignore national barriers and to bring people together globally across national lines in opposition in opposition to globalization of capital, to create globalization of people opposed to traditional notion of globalization. In other words, to use globalization, there's nothing wrong with the idea of globalization, Howard Zinn says, in a way that bypasses national boundaries, and of course, that is not involved, did not involve corporate control of the economic decisions that are made about people all over the world. I think national boundaries are one of the most unnatural things ever conceived by the human beings, quite frankly.
Because, well, you know, like birds don't observe them.
Well, and people didn't used to observe them.
No, they didn't used to exist.
Yes. They went here, they went there.
Huh. Artificially made, you say?
Yes.
Well, an astute listener has sent us an article all about the dance with the putting on of the caribou horns and the whatnot. Happens in September.
Just FYI. Oh, thank you. Okay, thank you.
Okay. Thank you, dear and astute listeners, for for adding it to that.
I'm glad you're all thinking.
It's good. It's good, isn't it? Mm-hmm. The other thing I guess I do want to bring into the conversation then is that discussion of anarchism, because it is, well, again, so important to understand what anarchism is and is not. This year, well, you know, it's interesting. I've identified as an anarchist for more than 25, 26 years now. And it's one of those things. I mean, I had read Emma Goldman when I was a teenager, and I thought, yeah, if only that existed anymore, that's what I would be. Because I had sort of thought that anarchy was stuck in time, that it never advanced past 1910 or so. And you know, it was kind of like, yeah, that would have been cool. It was about, you know, maybe 6 or 7 years later that I actually realized, oh, there is actually not a hard limit on, past 1915, sorry. No, actually, anarchism still exists as a vibrant
political theory. That would be a fundamentalist anarchist that would do that.
Boggles the mind. I think that, after I started identifying that way and talking to other people about my beliefs, I was often met with that whole, well, isn't that quaint? That actually doesn't exist. So right up there with when I tell people, I was a witch. Oh, I don't believe in witches. Strangely, I still exist. There was that sense of disbelief, that sense of that's not a legit political ideology.
Like gravity. You cannot believe in it if you don't want to.
And somehow or another, it went from that to, those anarchists, they all wear black, they all have masks, and they destroy property, and they're dangerous. They're violent. They're bomb-throwing. They're crazy people. And now we're falling back into obscurity again. It was an interesting blip. But there's still some folks who are putting out there, well, those anarchists, they're violent. You can't work with them. They don't have any rules.
Most people think, equate anarchy with chaos, mm-hmm. which is not.
It's an interesting thing.
Yes, it's an interesting thing.
They've obviously never been to an anarchist meeting, because damn, you've never seen so many procedural agreements, let's say. It's an interesting thing. And so the other part of that is, over the last year, I have heard and seen in the social medias many folks of progressive intent and progressive leaning saying that, wow, they sure would love to join this demonstration, but they're afraid the anarchists are going to be there and they're going to ruin everything. And I just kind of wonder, A, really? B, here's the thing. What do you believe in? Because honestly, I do understand that some people identifying as anarchists did smash some windows, did some property damage after the election in November. I'm going to go ahead and point out now, I was not in the country at that time. So I heard about these things secondhand, but it seems to have left folks unduly traumatized. Right? And I'm wondering, really, what's up with that? Because I think a lot of people in the progressive left areas have possibly succumbed to believing the narrative in corporate-owned news. And I just want to point that out, because that does not behoove you, me, or the movement. Yes, Lynn?
There is a lot. Well, there's a tremendous amount of free-floating anxiety happening right now. And people will project it upon what is the easiest thing if you are buying what happens in standard corporate media news. You will think it's the anarchists. It's whoever, at which so many people equate with chaos and think that that is who, somebody's got to be ruining it for them. It has to be somebody. It can't just be... I lean toward agent provocateurs, but that's just me.
Yep. Well, I think
because I have for many, many, I have been going to demonstrations since the 60s, and I have watched who generally are the, I don't want to say troublemakers because I like troublemakers. I think that's
who start playing Smashy Smashy.
Yeah, well, and also, God forbid, property should be, and I don't want property, anything to happen to people's property, but that is the sacred cow. The fact that other people are hurt by the police in the streets does not seem to be as big an issue as what as people's fear of what's going to happen to some property.
A window might be broken. Sure, kids have been shot, but a window might be broken.
I find that that's a little an attitudinal thing that needs some adjusting, but that goes right back to the unimportance of human beings in capitalism. We're just saying, people.
A fine, fine train of thought there, Lynn.
Why, thank you,
Anya. Let's go ahead and talk to some of our listeners. 503-231-8187. Good morning, Camilo. You're on the air.
Good morning. I'm calling to first talk about April 29th, if that's okay with you.
Yeah, go right ahead.
Okay, I just wanted to remind everyone that there will be a Buddhist meditation at Dawson Park at 11 o'clock. Look for the Buddhist Peace Fellowship sign. And we will...
What does that sign look like?
It is a yellow background with purple writing that says Buddhist Peace Fellowship.
Okay, good. It's, all right. I didn't know if it was just symbols or... Well, letters are symbols, so there
and
you
there's,
go.
And there's a logo of it.
Okay.
On it. And we'll be holding it aloft. Exactly where, I don't know yet. But I believe that there will also be a Buddhist walking meditation at the May Day Parade, but I'm not involved with that, so I don't have any details.
Okay. But, of course, the 29th, that is the march around climate change, and Dawson Park is, of course, in northeast Portland.
Yeah.
And
so 11 o'clock, we're gathering.
Okay.
Thank you.
Thanks very much for that information, Camilo. 503-231-8187, the number to call. Good morning, Dennis. You're on the air.
Yes, I want to talk about anarchy
okay.
and specifically about certain anarchists that you may know about. This goes back to a play written by James Thurber. It was, you know who that was,
yes.
I think.
Of course, of course.
It was his only play. It's called The Male Animal. And in that play, the professor, who is in great danger of having his wife stolen by a football player, it makes a speech. Now, this was a speech, you have to remember when this happened. It was long ago. And his speech is about Sacco and Vanzetti.
Yes.
Who were, I don't, do you know this? This is very,
I know they were.
It's very interesting for you to look up on in The Male Animal and see what that is, because it's in defense of these people who, of course, were I believe, executed, weren't they?
They were, in fact, executed.
Yeah, so that's my little thought today. Thank you for talking about anarchism. It needs to be out there, and I hope that people will... If people who don't know that speech will go and look it up in the play, it's a very, very good play. James Thurber was a remarkable person. He went blind toward the end of his life. He was just a remarkable person. So that's my thought for today.
Well, thank you, Dennis.
Dennis, thank you so much for sharing that.
Okay, bye-bye.
Yeah, so many places to go. There's... a wonderful statement that was put out by people in Seattle, actually. May Day, call for anti-capitalist presence at the march on Amazon. As Amazon's headquarters, of course, are there. I'm quoting from the release. It's posted on our Facebook page. Again, if you would like to read the entirety of it, Mayday, call for an anti-capitalist presence at the march on Amazon, posted to our Facebook page. They write, they've learned that the group responsible for the march on Amazon are planning to hand deliver their demands to representatives of Amazon and engage in rational dialogue. These demands, 20,000 housing units, free community college, a basic income for everyone in King County, and fully funded mass transit, if fulfilled, will only bolster the strength of capitalism over the lives of an already battered and exploited population. Now that Jeff Bezos and Amazon have extracted billions of dollars from across the world, they are poised to become the new techno-libertarian overlords of a redundant surplus population. Demands for a universal basic income and free housing units is a recipe for an unmanageable system of totalitarian warehousing where Jeff Bezos would be the sole ruler and dictator. This goes on at some length to talk about the idea of begging some baubles and some necessities from our corporate masters. Wouldn't it be, in fact, a more liberating stance to smash that system and create our lives for ourselves? I departed from the text wildly there. Let's say that, in fact, is not in the text. That's me adding to the thought that, you know, again, it's I'm a little tired of begging for crumbs. And I think that, you know, you can make an excellent case for the slow reformation of this system. You can also make excellent cases against that because really the planet doesn't have this much time.
Yeah, that was going to be my first.
The people that are being crushed under the wheels of the capitalist system every day also don't have this much time. And if you don't feel like the wheels are crushing you just yet, don't worry. They'll get to you next. Because, you know, again, everyone is seen as a resource for the system to chew up and consume.
I don't even know. Do they even think of, you know, I used to think that I heard something on some radio station about consumer spending is down. And I'm like, do they even care about, I don't even know if we're even resources anymore from the way policy is moving. It doesn't even seem
Somebody's got to be the service workers.
They can automate that if they feel like it. I mean, I don't even feel like we're even resources anymore. We're just sort of expendable pieces of flesh to them at this particular time.
I think that's sort of what I was implying with resource.
True.
Yeah.
All right.
What are your thoughts? Call on in. Let us know. 503-231-8187. What is anarchism? I'm going to say anarchism is not inherently violent, right? Anarchism is actually just simply the philosophy that no one person should govern or tell another, dictate to another one person how to live a good life, how to live a moral life, how one should be in this world. It is, in fact, a system without hierarchy. It does not necessarily mean a system without rules.
Traffic rules still apply.
Well, and again, yeah, so do the laws of physics and thermodynamics.
That's right.
It's an interesting thing.
That's revolutionary in this administration.
The idea that one could be self-governing and live a moral life because, well, we've decided that it is important to take care of each other. It is important to take care of our planet. It's important to live in a society that emphasizes social bonding. Actually doesn't need dictates from above. I'm going to go ahead and actually put out there that those dictates from above are far, far more necessary to impose a system that alienates us from each other, because that is not a natural state of being. People are, and you can, you know, I should have had my stacks of psychological studies over the years, but people are, by and large, social beings that actually enjoy cooperation. We can see this in many studies done of very small children before they get that basically beaten out of them through a public school system. And I think that it's important to really, again, look at if somebody didn't tell you not to rape, plunder, pillage, and murder, would you just naturally go off and do it? I'm going to say no.
Well, there might be some people who would.
And there actually still are some people that do even with those rules.
But should those people be the folks running things? This is my question.
It is a fair point.
Thank you.
Yeah. And so as a feminist anarchist, socio-anarchist, I truly, strongly believe that we do have those social bonds and that we can create egalitarian societies, as has been done around the world throughout history, before other systems get imported and, you know, crush local folks.
Takes a lot of meetings and patience. This is...
Well, at least in the versions that we have enacted around us in the last couple hundred years.
Yeah, for sure.
But I'm going to say that actually for folks before colonization and that importation of a dominating system didn't necessarily take a whole lot of meetings. It was, in fact, the way people just sort of lived. People had certain roles. But there and there were certainly people who were who would make decisions, but not generally in that very top-down authoritarian way that we have come to know that must be enforced by rigid laws and punishments.
Anyway, that's a
little more on anarchy and anarchist theory. But let's go ahead and talk to callers. 503-231-8187, the number to call. I'm Ani.
I'm Lynn, sipping coffee.
And we are Positively Revolting here on KBOO, your very own community radio station. Let's go ahead and talk to Phil. Good morning, Phil. You're on the air.
Good morning. I was happy to participate in the January 21st gathering of the people, and I am concerned that the event for tomorrow on climate is in an adverse location. We need to talk about how people can get there, because people won't want to drive to Dawson Park.
The number four bus goes there?
It's a long walk from Lloyd Center or any.
The number four bus goes right by. Number four, and I think I used to live there. 33 might. What's the other one? 40. Those bus, the 40 and the 4, I know, go right by Dawson Park.
Okay, so it's a matter of then taking a city bus.
Yeah.
Well, as opposed to, I mean, if you don't want to walk and you don't want to drive, the city bus seems like an option. You can also ride a bike. Perhaps you have a horse or a broomstick. I mean, you know, you're going to get across town somehow. City buses, by and large, work for that.
It's a great park if you've never been there, but it's
beautiful.
It's a beautiful place, and it's just, to me, as convenient as, well, maybe there's not quite as much transportation as there is to downtown, but it's a lovely park.
And it's across the street from Emmanuel Hospital, and it's in a very dense urban neighborhood, so I'm not sure what your point is.
My point is that I've only gone by the park many, many times by car, and I am not familiar with the buses. The January 21st event worked so well because people could converge by many means of public transport. And if public transport is the answer, and it must be the answer, let's really talk specifically about how it's going to work. For example, if you need to park a car somewhere to get on the bus...
Then you're doing it wrong.
I'm going to take the train.
Okay, cool.
Get off somewhere. But... I think that it is not a silly thing to regard this as a communication problem, and
well,
I'll leave it at that.
Okay, fair enough. I'm going to guess you don't live in Northeast Portland, and I think it's probably a good idea to familiarize yourself with public transportation. I'm going to refer you to TriMet.org. It's a brilliant website put out by TriMet. Now, I'm going to actually admit pretty readily, I'm not a huge fan of TriMet. I find their late night schedule lacking in the extreme. When I was younger, back in the 80s, we had something called Night Owl service that meant that you could actually take a bus home when the clubs closed. I found that to be kind of, well, convenient, since you don't want to drive intoxicated, right? Well, so budget cuts, whatnot. They don't have so much in the Night Owl service. If you live at the extreme ends of the routes, you don't get a lot of service, much at all. But Dawson Park is not at any kind of extreme end of the route. It is, in fact, less than a mile out of the city center, right? It is pretty much just over the steel bridge and down about half a mile. It is not far, far away, unless you happen to have been pushed out of the city center by gentrification lately, in which case, yeah, it's farther. But yeah, there's I I'll do the social service and actually look up the bus lines for you. But yeah, you can take a MAX to the convention center. You can get off on the convention center and get a bus that goes down MLK, and you're going to end up walking four blocks to the park.
Six is the bus that goes down MLK.
That's right.
Grand?
Yep. Yes, the six, the four, you're right, Lynn. There are so many, in fact, buses that go by there, and they connect with the trains.
Yeah, 40 go right by there, but I'm not sure how
they connect with the train.
Do they go through the Rose Garden?
Yeah. Here I am. I'm looking it up, so I can't talk for a minute.
Okay.
On you go, Lynn.
All right. I think I can't, it's terrible. I can't remember if I used to go there, use those particular routes all the time. For biking, I'm telling you, Williams has quite the Williams and Vancouver have quite the bike lanes. They're a little confusing to drivers, but they're really great for biking. That's another way you can get there. You could take take public transport to the Rose Quarter, big transit center, and it would be real easy to bike from there.
It is so easy.
There's
to bike from there.
Just all sorts of ways to get there, and it's a lovely, 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 lovely park, Dawson Park. It's got there's a wonderful kind of statue monument thing that's
gazebo. We call it
a gazebo. That's what it is. Thank you.
Yes.
Nouns fail me sometimes.
And it's on Stanton, right? That's the cross street.
Yeah.
I remember that.
Yeah.
Right. I'm still looking things up and trying to remember my maps in my head.
Well,
it's not
maybe I'll
let's go ahead and take another
call. Vicki.
Oh, good morning.
Good morning.
Y'all. I want to say I am positively revolting today too.
Thank you.
That's excellent.
The more the merrier.
And I thank you all for your show. What my question is, I'm doing a personal study about men running responsible for war, okay? And what I'm calling about is I'd like to have you, your point of view about anarchism and sexism and where men being in leadership or decision-making roles impact the movement. Is that appropriate to your topic?
Sure, it can be. I'm not sure that we're going to agree in the answer.
We don't have to
agree.
I just I want to know what these revolting minds like mine think about that.
Cool.
I can take your answer off there if you like.
I am personally, as a feminist, yes, I believe in looking at egalitarianism. I believe in the power of women to be in leadership positions to guide and foster movements. Yes, all of that. Do I think that male energy is inherently violent? No. I don't. I think that we are all socialized in a bizarre and completely unnatural gender binary system in which the values associated with war and war mentality are encouraged in boys, and the values of passivity and domestication, that's not even a word, domestication.
Nice try, though. It was very creative.
Yeah, it was, wasn't it? I just throw in an extra syllable there because it makes me sound smart. That those values are encouraged in girls, and that we see this really unnatural gulf that is rigidly societally enforced. I think that we can learn a lot by looking at different cultures that have different senses of what it is to be a man and what it is to be a woman.
And that hierarchy has, in Western culture, has benefited, well, I don't know, I wouldn't say it benefited, it has put men in the power seat. Not a natural structure. I mean, so many things are unnatural right now. Like, as we were talking about boundaries, national boundaries, and look at the issues that's causing, are completely unnatural. And to put men in the position of rulers is also unnatural, and it's not good for them, and it's not good for us. as women, and does not in any way, shape, or form help the planet. I mean, there are and I think binary gender things are starting to just explode, and that is a huge, huge issue right now, as well it should be.
Okay, thank you. I appreciate your answer, but I agree with it being an environmental thing, because I think people inherently want peace and to get along and be cooperative with one another, because it feels better. You know,
yeah, it does.
It feels better. But
we live better lives
I
that
think
way.
That, but I think there has been intent on the part of the gender of the male to take this.
Margaret Thatcher.
And then subjugate people.
Indira Gandhi.
Hillary Clinton.
Golda
Madeleine
Mayer.
Albright.
This is, so far we have not done well with, well, there's...
there are women who are brilliant and doing it right.
I was thinking of Mary, and I can't think of her last name, who was the president of Ireland. I know, I didn't want to just trash all women heads of state.
No, and certainly
few
not.
Few as there are.
Though Theresa May,
right,
we
right,
could trash her for a minute.
Like
I know.
Said, and... inherent, and I think that everyone would agree that men have been generally in charge of things for a long time. So,
sure.
And how's that been going?
Accept responsibility for the way things are. That's my point.
Okay. Yeah. Okay.
Well, thanks a lot,
Vicki. Thanks for your call. Thanks for thinking.
Absolutely. Thinking, it's an important thing. Whether we agree or not, thinking is an important thing. 503-231-8187, the number to call this morning. Go ahead and join us as we take on, oh, so many issues of the day. We haven't actually talked about gathering points and whatnot so much on Monday. We should get on to that very soon. I do want to get back with my full TriMet report. And that
please,
is,
Ani, what is your TriMet report?
Well, you know, from the convention center / Rose Quarter sort of area, however you might get to that by bus, bike, car, you know, however you get to that train, we call that train, Max. You could, in fact, take the number 44 Mox Crest and get off at North Williams and Northeast Morris Streets. You could take the number 4 Division and, again, get off at North Williams and Northeast Morris. Or you could, in fact, take the number 6, which will take you to MLK and Stanton. All of these buses will get you
west.
Within about 3 blocks.
Then just go west and you will get to.
Of the park, if not on the corner of the park. Okay. So with
and
that,
there will probably be people around that will you'll sort of know which direction to go.
Yeah, if you're absolutely lost and you're like, I don't know where Dawson Park is, go to Emmanuel Hospital, because there's signs all over the place for that, and it's across the street. Also, ask people. Yeah, good idea. Ask people. All right, we've got callers. They're all lined up. Let's go ahead and take somebody. Oh, let's call him John. Good morning, John. You're on the air.
Hello.
Hi.
I have a fantasy concept.
I'm ready for it.
Okay. I know it's not going to happen because it's a fantasy.
Okay,
right?
All right. We're
how things can start.
At this gathering, they should have had massive books of the title Ecotopia. It was written around about the mid-70s.
Early 70s, yeah, Kalambash.
Yeah, yeah. Well, you know, book came up after, you know, the events have been going on for the last 100 days, right, where you had, I think it was Trump, you know, insulting Hawaii, saying that you're just a rock in the Pacific. He says he's going to
I think that
after.
Was the Attorney General.
Yeah, Attorney General, okay. Yeah, the one who
who's an Oompa Loompa. He's really an Oompa Loompa.
Don't insult Oompa Loompas. That's good. They had to run away from the vermicious canids. Don't get me started.
Yeah. Okay.
Yeah, well...
Sorry.
You know,
redigress.
You know, the old saying, if you can't beat them, join them. I say if you can't beat them, leave them. You know, we're better off without them.
Oh, so you're looking at Ecotopia as sort of a secessionist call?
Yeah, well, it was, you know, Northern California, Oregon, and Washington. Mm-hmm. But anyway, it was a diverse, industries, and they let other people, like, you know, minorities and stuff, have autonomy in their borders. And everything was kind of ecologically balanced. Now, we're talking about the early 70s that people, you know, it was ahead of its time, by the way. But in the modern time, I would say all of California, Oregon, Washington, and Hawaii, and maybe try to coax British Columbia to join.
Yeah, actually, there is an active movement. It's the Cascadian movement,
exactly.
Right?
I've been hearing bioregionalism.
Yeah.
I mean, there are, you know, it's because, you know, look at just the 100 days, look how much damage and look how much intimidation.
Hey, we're only on day 98. There's still two more days that he can really mess things up.
But we have 4 years of this.
Yeah.
Well, can you imagine if you times this by to the 10th power? I mean, I don't know. But I'm just saying that, you know, this regime has no consideration for anybody that makes less than $1 million.
Yeah. Hey, John, I wanna jump in just for a second and point out a couple of things. One, you started talking about this is a pure fantasy, never going to happen. Well, and referring to Ecotopia, which is, of course, a work of fiction. And it was published in 75, which is about 3 years later than I thought it was. So my bad there. I read this a long time ago, and it got me thinking about these concepts and actually living sustainably with the earth and all this stuff. And I only remember it in the most broad of things, because, in fact, I read it once when I was about 12. And I, you know, it did get me thinking about different ways of organizing society. I remember having conversations about this book with Judy Berry in the 90s before she passed away. Judy Berry was an Earth First organizer. She was also a labor organizer, a feminist organizer. She was amazing. And she said that she had gone back and reread Ecotopia rather recently before this conversation that we had, which was about 96 or 97. And she said she was so embarrassed. She was so embarrassed that she had that she had promoted this book. And she was like, this is such a great book. Da-da-da, everyone needs to read it. Because it had been years since she had read it. And then she went back. And after our discussion, I decided, oh, yeah, right. I do kind of remember all that stuff. And I didn't go back and reread it. It's a fine book for its time. But let's just say, yeah, there's some gender issues. There's some, you know, it's a work of fiction. It's not perfect at all. But what it did was it sparked people's thinking. And that's really the best and highest use of fiction. And that there is a very real movement to look at the bioregionalism, and that is to redefine our territories by natural boundaries and not these bizarro artificial lines drawn on paper maps. And that, you know, we look at water systems, we look at natural geographical divisions, and Northern California through British Columbia is the Cascadia bioregion. There is an active movement for people that are interested in looking at actually reorganizing ourselves in that way. You can search engine them on up. And I think that if you're interested in looking at Cascadia bioregionalism, it would really be a treat for you to see that there's current organizing, meetings you can join, discussions to be had, and actual organizing work to be done. It's not just a fantasy. There are people trying to make it so, and to make it a heck of a lot better than Ernest Kallenbach wrote about it in 75.
And there's a large movement in California for secession.
Yeah.
Since they are one of the largest economies in the world.
Yeah, true that.
A really good book about that I enjoyed about utopia. Well, it wasn't utopia, but it was a futuristic book with Starhawk's The Fifth Sacred Thing. And I found it very inspiring to read that at this particular time. And
it also plays into a lot of the same principles.
Yes, yes.
Well, just generally, this last election, you can see how the boundaries, the political boundaries, the West Coast. I mean, Hillary Clinton took it, you know, hands down. And no, I don't think a lot of people. See, my mom's from the South, and I don't understand. You know, the people up here. If you've never been to the South, you don't understand how far away we are mentally as well as physically from them. I have no comment with people in Arkansas and Alabama whatsoever, or Oklahoma.
I don't know. You breathe air. You breathe water. You drink water. You live on this earth.
I mean, have
you're affected by gravity.
This is true. Of life itself. I mean, it's just completely out there. You know, compared to what we have up here.
It is the thought patterns are a little different.
I'm going to challenge that again. I'm sorry.
Have you been to the South lately?
I haven't been to the South ever. I've been in a straight line between Oregon and Michigan. I have not traveled in the States, but I've got friends from all over the country.
Okay.
And so, what I want to say is, my God, Lynn, have you been to Eastern Oregon? Have you been to East County?
Yeah.
As a visibly queer girl, I mean, really, outside of the Portland metro bubble, I don't find this particularly utopic. I'm just going to say.
Well, just a fantasy thought I have, whatever.
Well, yeah, no, it's a great fantasy thought, but I'm saying you should actually work for it. If you like the idea, work for it, because it's happening. Other people are.
I understand. There are some positive things going on. Really, there is.
Yeah, there really are.
I mean, these town hall meetings of these politicians, man, getting, they're called on the floor on some of their behavior, how they vote. So that was inspiring.
Hey, John, thank you so much for your call this morning.
Bye-bye.
Take care. I want to go ahead and get Mimi on the line as we are almost out of show. We've got about 10 minutes left, 503-231-8187, if you would like to squeeze on in. Mimi, good morning to you. You're on the air.
Hey, good morning. I wanted to bring into the conversation defunding Fleet Week.
Yes.
We talk about...
Oh, that is a great concept.
I've been wanting to do this for a long time. I've been meeting other people, now that I'm talking about it out loud, who also want Fleet Week defunded. And I brought it up last week to City Council because they had the Rosarians there as an agenda item. And so all of our testimony for that day was around Fleet Week, was around all of the issues around war and making our waters a waterway that we celebrate every year in the beginning of June. And it needs to stop. People need to stand up and recognize that we can't accept all of the things that keep happening because they're ritual here. Mm-hmm. War should never be ritualized. It already is by government. And we have such an extent of poverty in our state. Ani, you were just talking about it. If you go out of Portland, we see it, but when we're inside Portland, we see racism, we see targeting, we see houselessness, we see all of these things that are perpetuated by the war machine.
Yep.
And until we put all of these things together and stand up together to tell the Rose Festival, which is the primary sponsor of Fleet Week, to defund and go to our city council and the county to tell them that this has to stop, we're just perpetuating war in the guise of not perpetuating war.
Absolutely.
Very, very true. And
I'm glad you continue your popularity with the city council, Mimi. You just keep going.
Thank you.
You're welcome.
And actually, I would love to have you on the show talking about the details of working against Fleet Week sometime soon. Let's be in touch.
Okay. Thanks for your show.
Take good care. Keep on doing amazingly great work. Let's go ahead and talk to Lynn. Good morning, Lynn. You're on the air.
Good morning. So I apologize. I tuned in late. I didn't hear anything you were saying about anarchism.
And I'm sorry. You're going to have to speak up just a little bit.
Oh, I'm sorry.
That's better. Yeah, that's better.
Okay. Yeah, I was apologizing for tuning in late. I didn't really hear very much what you were saying about anarchism.
Yeah.
But with regard to this area, I think I'm pretty anarchistic, but I don't really identify that way, mainly because I don't know what the anarchist solution to things like Hanford is. And I was wondering if you could... or anyone who calls after me could throw a little light on that.
I want Mimi back on the line. No, you know, the anarchist solution to anything is that you organize, you talk to each other, you talk to the people most affected, you make plans. That, you know, do we have an answer already written in the book? This is how this works. This is how that works. We do, you know, no. If anyone had that answer, it would already be done. So the idea is that you organize, you talk, you meet, you converse, you build relationships, you make agreements, and you make actions that seem to make sense, right? That's the answer. There are groups that are actively working on it. Again, I encourage people to really look into groups that are working, looking at Hanford Watch, and the group that the name just flew out of my head, but maybe it'll come back into my head in the next 3.5 minutes that we have left to be on the air.
Okay. Can I just clarify a little bit? Mm-hmm. I didn't mean as far as how you organize about it. Well, it's a huge industrial enterprise, and this is what I'm not clear on, is how anarchism would address, you know, that kind
big
of...
Big industrial enterprises? I'm not totally understanding your question.
I'm saying it requires so much resources and coordination to address something that huge, that it's not clear to me how anarchists would approach that.
Well,
and I'm not saying
give
you
it some
answer.
Thought.
I'm
and,
trying to clarify my question.
Yeah. Okay.
We are not the all.
Yeah. I mean, and there is no answer. One anarchist solution, right? Again, it's conversation, it's meetings, it's organizing. That's what it is. That is the answer. It's
right.
Just not a finished answer. It's an answer we write together. And
one of our listeners just said anarchists would shut down the nuclear industry in order to keep it from getting worse.
Okay, well, there's that.
With
3 minutes
that
left.
Happen? No.
Thank you.
Mm-hmm. Thanks. With 3 minutes left, I do really feel the need to say May Day, Monday. There are a couple things that I think we would be remiss not to mention. May Day at noon in Shemansky Park. All power to the people. Rise up, resist, and unite.
1010 Southwest Park Avenue.
That's hosted by the Portland May Day Coalition from 12 to 5 o'clock. Yeah, Shemansky Park is the park blocks at Salmon. And also May Day 2017, Revolutionary Youth and Family Zone. Also, Shemansky Park. This is at 2 o'clock. So, you know, how things are organized, how things are divided into the Revolutionary Youth and Family Zone versus the noon call time for people that are in their middle years without families. I don't know. You can, again, check this stuff out. But Shemansky Park, if you are interested in May Day political activities, things are happening.
April 30th, film night and panel discussion with Rose City Redneck Revolt, Sunday at 5:30, and it is there. I don't see where it is on the...
And since we only have 2 minutes left and we are not going to get to all the people that just jammed the phone lines, let's go ahead and take Chris. Chris, good
Short
morning.
And sweet,
you're
Chris.
On the air.
I mean,
we've awesome perhaps
show.
Caught you. Hello.
I'm calling about the PGE efforts to build two new natural gas burning plants in Eastern Oregon, near Boardman, where they're decommissioning the coal plant because they can't afford to keep it running. And they were, the original word to the legislature and the public was that the coal plant was going to be replaced with clean energy, but I call it under the Trump radar. They decided to build natural gas, fracked gas, piped in from the Dakotas plant which are going to have a 40-year life, and they're going to be the biggest source of pollution for the state of Oregon.
Okay.
We have only a few weeks to give to scream out that we don't want this crap. And right now,
we only have 1 minute of show left.
Okay, Climate March this Saturday, Climate
right.
Justice March in North Portland. But on the 15th, there is going to be testimony to the Public Utility Commission next to the Chapman Park. And next in the Portland building, it's going to, the rally starts at 5. The testimony is going to go from 6 to 8:30. contact the Sierra Club or public Portland positions for public responsibility or 350.
Okay.
Okay. Thanks very much, Chris. We have totally run out of show. Thank you so much for your call.
Great.
Mayday, celebrate life, come together, explore anarchism, pass the pages of the mainstream media.
Have fun with your peeps.
Have fun with your peeps. And, probably best to end capitalism now before it ends us. All right. Take care. We'll see you next week.
It's another Mayday, come again. Goodbye to the rains of April. Another May Day, come again, and we dance around the maypole.
KBOO Community Radio is proud to co-sponsor What the Festival at the Wolf Run Ranch, about 90 miles east of Portland, from June 16th to 19th. What the Festival is a weekend of interactive art, 8 stages of electronic and live music, speaker series, movement classes, and more. This year, performers include Zoo, Cut Copy, Grammatic, OTT, Big Wild, Rez, Sophie Tucker, Baker Matt, Paper Diamond, The Funk Hunters, and many more. Again, that's What the Festival, happening at the Wolf Run Ranch from June 16th to 19th. More information about What the Festival can be found at kboo.fm on the right side of the homepage under Community Events.
KBOO Community Radio is a proud co-sponsor of Spirit Trials, happening from Friday, April 21st to Sunday, April 30th at Disjecta in Portland. Spirit Trials is a live hip-hop soundtrack, a theatrical meditation on race, religion, and the criminal justice system. Created and performed by Delock Braithwaite, a Deaf Poetry Jam alum and National Poetry Slam winner. Again, that's Spirit Trials, happening from Friday, April 21st to Sunday, April 30th at Disjecta, 8371 North Interstate Avenue in Portland. More information can be found at kboo.fm on the right-hand side of the homepage under Community Events.
And this is KBOO Portland. It's 9 o'clock a.m. on Friday, April 28th, 2017. Coming up on KBOO, One Land, Many Voices. Historian Ilan Pappe argues that peace between Israelis and Palestinians can no longer be achieved by a two-state